Strong to, we should have stood though. Get y'all. If you didn't get a handout, raise your hand and Mark will hand them out to you. They're in the back. We're having a starting our series on the Proverbs tonight. Everyone's got one? It looks like this. Because you're going to memorize every verse, right? That's your job. No, we're glad you're here. We went through on Wednesday night the first 9 chapters of the book of Proverbs. Wednesday night? And we wanted to finish the study of Proverbs by looking at themes or subjects, because there's so many different Proverbs and many of them are just one verse long. But you can categorize them under certain topics like money or friends, or tonight we're talking about work. And the word that keeps coming up some 12 times in the NAS version, the NAS has 14 times, is the word sluggard. I love that word. We'll talk about it. It's like God has a sense of humor and he's making fun of the sluggard to try to make a point, don't be one. This Saturday, we had the privilege to go to Jerry Bassett's funeral. And all I'll say this is, when it was all said and done, after hearing what people said about him, and rehearsing his life, you went away and you felt like I did. I want to be a better man. I want to be a better worker. And I want to be a better husband. I want to be a better Christian. I mean, isn't that what you want to model for someone when it's all said and done? That you left an example. And BJ's been talking on Thursdays about modeling or mentoring for others. And it's Tuesday, excuse me, at 10 o'clock. 11 o'clock. I got everything wrong. And that's what it's all about. And it's interesting, work is so essential, and we're going to talk about the necessity of it and some wisdom from it. But let's first just talk about Proverbs in general. And we could spend the whole hour just talking about it, but after we introduce us what the Proverbs are, then we're just going to answer this question. It's not a dirty word, work, is it? But when I mention the word work, what a lot of people think, like, oh, man. And other people, yes, get to go to work. And other people, it's a drudgery. And other people, it's freedom. You have mixed emotions about it, depending on who you talk to. And some people say, you know, if you love what you do, you never go to work. You know, so all these sayings, but we want to look at what God has to say about work. And because as we know that most of the Proverbs were written by the wisest man in the world, Solomon. They're really authored by God. And they're compiled for us so you and I can gain wisdom without going through the actual experiences to learn wisdom. Is that a good idea? Because if you've ever swung a hammer very much, inevitably you're going to smack your thumb, and that does not feel good. And after you've done it sufficient enough times, you gain a little wisdom about where to hold the material, how to swing. Wouldn't you like to have wisdom without going through the pain? That's what the Proverbs offer us, that they are these collections of wise sayings that give you insight into life that you would never have unless you went through the experiences yourself. And so they're invaluable. And let's just look at a couple things about them. First of all, a definition. This was a concise definition, I think, that kind of helps us understand it. The proverb is a concise, memorable saying, usually in poetic form, most all of them are, expressing a generally accepted observation, notice the word generally, about life as it's filtered through biblical revelation. In other words, saying God did it. So when we want to look at this, we want to look at 4 characteristics or things about Proverbs. First of all, it's all about poetic parallelism. And we have Hebrew parallelism all throughout the Old Testament, where you have a verse where one line will say one thing and the second line looks different, but it's actually the same expression but put in different words. We're going to see that throughout the Proverbs. Sometimes they're not synonymous lines, they're antithetical or they're opposite of each other. So the wise man does this, but the fool does that. But they're the same subject theme, but it's showing the opposite so you get the point. Yeah, I don't want to be that guy. And so, but you're going to see this poetic use throughout the book of Proverbs. And that's why most of them are just one verse long. That makes them then very concise so you can remember them. And that's very important. They're concise. Everyone, perhaps as a parent, has heard this one. Train up a child. All right. When he's older, if you train up a child in the way you go, when he's older, he will not depart from it. We've heard that. It's so concise that it gives us a universal truth to guide our child rearing. But I want you to know this. It's universally true, but it's not true universally. What does that mean? You have to be careful and say, well, this is absolute. Every time this happens, and if it doesn't happen, you were the fool. Well, it's universally true, but there are exceptions to it. All right, and we have to understand that. Like, for example, this is not a proverb about from the Bible, but maybe you've heard your mom say it. The child comes up to you and says, I'm bored. Said, no, you're not. The problem is you're boring. How does that go? I forgot it. Now, you're not bored, you're boring. Wow, that's kind of a smack in the face. But is it true if boring people often are bored? But people that are always looking for adventure are never bored because they're always doing something. Now, is that true all the time? Well, there's going to be a proverb that we won't read tonight, but it says, he who pushes a stone will have it fall back on him. Now, who learned that proverb? Someone that was pushing a stone what? Uphill. And you're pushing that stone uphill, and what happens after a while? This is hard. And you get tired, and you rest for just a moment, and what happens to that stone? It starts rolling back, and maybe it rolled on that person and broke a leg. And so, I think I'll write that down in a proverb. Now, is that true every time? No, but is there a truism there? There is. He who digs a pit, what, can you finish that one? Will fall into it. Now, is that true absolutely all the time? No. But so they're universally true, but they're not true universally. In other words, there will be exceptions to them. Does that make sense? You don't take them as absolute to the bank every time. Finally, they're black and white. I love this part about the Proverbs. There's no wiggle room. There's a fool and the wise man. There's a diligent worker and there's a sluggard. And you are left to judge yourself and make application to yourself from the proverb of which I am, which one of them am I? So that's why they're so powerful. Because if you meditate on them, and that's our job, is to take them and meditate upon them and say, what is God trying to tell me? And which of these am I in reflection of his word? You know, which way am I going? It's interesting. Some people have taken upon themselves to read a whole chapter a day for a month. And there's 31 Proverbs or chapters in Proverbs. And usually there's 30 or 31 days, right? And you could read the book of Proverbs in a month. If you did it every month in a year, do you think you'd be a little wiser at the end of the year than when you started? So that's something you could try. Other people have done this. We'll take one chapter today, and we'll pick one verse out of it. And then tomorrow we'll take chapter 2 on the second of the month, and we'll just take one verse and talk about it with our family. Then do that through the whole month. So on day 15... you take the 15th chapter, you take one verse, and you talk about it, one proverb. Now, wouldn't that be valuable for parents to sit down with their children and do that and to give them God's wisdom? We're to meditate upon them and digest them and use them in our life. They're not just a book of clever sayings like chicken soup for the soul. These are given to us by God. And we can gain divine wisdom by reading them. But we have to take it upon ourselves to do that. So with that being said, let's talk about work. All right? And I'm going to have you do some work. I'm going to have some people read in the back. Who wants to be my designated reader? I got Dave there. So you got to have these verses looked up on your sheet. So when I call on you, you already have them. Okay? Then I need, who else wants to read in the back? I need a voice. Mark? Okay, get your Bible out. Thank you. Voices in the back so everyone can hear. You want to read too? All right, so you have to keep up because I'm not going to turn to all of them. So first of all, why work? And the answer simply is because, first of all, God works. we know that in Genesis chapter 1 that what? God created the heavens and the earth. He is a working God. And how many days had he created in? We all know that. And what did he do on the seventh day? That means he worked 6 days to rest on the seventh day. And then we know that Jesus himself was a worker. We saw in John chapter 5, verse 17, let's see if Dave's with me. You got it? I needed a sluggard in the audience, and I have one. John 5:17. It's on your sheet, your handout, right? If you got it. And then Mark's got John 17, verse 4, right?
Now I do.
Okay, go.
I glorify you on the earth, having accomplished the work which you have given me to do.
Okay. I glorified you, God, by accomplishing the work which thou gave me to do. Jesus' work, okay? Now, they were getting on him about work on the Sabbath, but isn't that amazing? He says, at this moment in time, God is still working, and he says, I work. Now, when we look at ourselves, we're created in the image of God. And we have this innate desire and ability to want to work and the capacity to work. It's interesting, when God created man in his own image, he gave him dominion over every creeping thing, and he said, go out and multiply and subdue the earth. Does that take work? And then in chapter 2 of Genesis, verse 15, he put him in a garden. What did he say? Cultivate it and keep it. Does that require work? Yes, they could just harvest the fruit, but they were involved in activity. Now, that work became much harder in chapter 3 after the sin, where God pronounced a curse upon the ground, it'll grow thistles and thorns, and by the sweat of your brow, you're going to now eat. But they're going to continue to work. And so with that being said, we look at that, man's made to work. And it's interesting, 2 Thessalonians, you got it? 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, we see that Paul modeled this whole idea about working, and he gives us some divine instruction from heaven. And as he's turning there in Ephesians chapter 4, he says, get off the old man, put on the new man that looks just like Christ. Stop stealing, and what does he say in verse 28? Start working. Work with what? Your hands. There's something noble about working so that you can also share with others. Now, let me just say this. I don't want to even get in the discussion, but some people say, no, it's just a cultural thing that they've made males feel like they have to work to be providers, and it's just a cultural value that's really not absolute. And I said, no, that's hogwash. Men feel inadequate. They feel like they're not doing anything. They have low self-esteem when they're not working. Why do you think that is? Is it a cultural thing or is it universal? Because we're made in God's image and we've been made to work and to provide for ourselves and provide for our family. And we feel just little less than fulfilled when we're not working and we're getting handouts. It used to be a shameful thing in our society a few generations ago when men didn't work. It was shameful not to have a job. And those people that didn't work were looked at as just lazy. Well, we'll get to the word sluggard. Okay, 2 Thessalonians. Paul models himself.
For yourselves know how ye ought to follow us, for we have behaved ourselves disorderly among you, neither did we eat any man's bread or not, but wrought with labor and travail night and day, that we might not be chargeable to any of you. Not because we have not power, but to make ourselves an example unto you to follow us. For even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any would not work, neither should he eat.
All right, I love the King James, but we'll have to interpret now. He said, we worked with our own hands so we wouldn't have to be a burden on anyone. We didn't take anything without paying for it. Even though we had the authority to do that, because the laborers were his hire, but we offered ourselves an example, and furthermore, we gave you instruction. If a man doesn't work, you don't let him eat. Now, in our society, that seems unloving and socially unjust, doesn't it? But that comes from divine wisdom, doesn't it? That you're ruining a person when you're giving them handouts, when they have the capacity to work. That's the key here. So everything we talk about now in Proverbs, we're not talking about the people that don't have the ability to work, whether they're mentally have handicaps, physical handicaps, challenges that somehow prevent them from actually working to employ themselves. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the people that have the capacity but choose not to, the sluggard and the diligent person. You understand? All right, so I don't want any objections about, well, what about the guy? No, we already dismissed that. We're talking about people that can, and I would say that includes probably 99% of us in here. No questions. All right. Now, with that being said, do we all work at something? Men go to work, women go to work. How about the women that stay home? Do they work?
Yes.
I think the most demeaning thing is to say, oh, you just stay at home? Don't you want to be a career person? Don't you want to get a real job? Oh, man. Or probably even women, when they hear all that, they begin to own it. Say, well, I'm just a homemaker. I just stay at home. Or I'm just a mother. You're just, well, we know they work as hard as anyone. We'll take a peek at the worthy woman in just a bit. So men work, women work, children are supposed to work even. It's not child labor abuse. But even the lazy person, do they work? What do they work at? They work at not working. And I've always said it's the people that don't work, work as hard as they do trying to get money from people and scams, at a real job, they'd be really well off. Well, let's examine that and look at the idea then. God talks about the sluggard. Now, the word sluggard is an interesting word because you might think of a sloth. They have a picture of a slow animal. But I think of a slug. But that's really not fair, because a slug actually works pretty hard. They're just slow. And the reason I say that, if you plant flowers in the valley in Oregon and you don't put out some slug bait, or you don't put out what's the flower that marigolds that chase away because of the odor, what will slugs come do in the night? Our opportunities, we were looking at, there was one, two, three, there's four, they were up on the flower. There's slugs everywhere, and they're chewing down all of our flowers. They work really hard. They're just slow, and they're just slimy. But so don't give a slug a bad rap, but maybe that depicts this person here. When the buzzer goes off, he hits the snooze. And it's like God makes fun of him. He says, one proverb, he pictures him like hinged to his bed, like a door. What is a door? It's hinged on one side. It goes open and closed, just back and forth. And here's the guy on his bed, and he's hinged. He can't get off it. He just rolls to one side. The only work he does is roll over to the other side, back asleep. And that's the picture of him. And God calling him a sluggard, tends to make fun of him in a sarcastic way to make a point. And, of course, warns about his poverty. Now, can women be sluggards as well? Or is it just a male problem? All right, we'll have to talk about that in due time. But let's look at some of the scriptures. I won't look at all of them because I want you to read them on your own, what it has to say. So you're up, Dave. You already got it, chapter 6. All right, since you don't got it, look at chapter 26, verse 15, and let's all turn to chapter 6 in Proverbs, all right? Because this is really...
Start Proverbs 6 and verse 6.
No, you go to 26, please.
I got 6.
I'm going to read 6 for us, all right? Because this is like the theme verse for the whole topic tonight. Where we begin in verse 6 of chapter 6. Go to the ant, O sluggard. There's been some great sermons just on this section and talking about the industriousness of an ant. But we'll just refrain our comments just to the words. Observe her ways. In other words, just watch her for a while. And be wise. Having no chief, no officer or ruler, what does that mean? No one tells the ant what to do. So many people, hey, if they don't have a boss, they won't do nothing. Because when the boss is gone, what? What do they do? Nothing. And it's nothing. Okay? Verse 8. but yet she prepares her food in the summer, gathers her provision in the harvest. How long will you lie down, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding the hands to rest. Here's a warning. Your poverty will come in like a vagabond, and your need like an armed man. Look at the ant. And the ant's a picture of diligence. They're always working. And that's the model that he's using for our example. Okay, chapter 26, verse 15. Now, that's a real curious proverb. A sluggard or a lazy man buries his hand in the dish, but what does he do then? He's just too lazy to bring it up to his mouth. He is so lazy, he can't even feed himself. Now, isn't that the epitome of laziness? But yet, that's a picture of some people, opportunities right in front of them, but they won't avail themselves because they have to do the least amount of work. They're lazy, and that's the picture here. There's a lot of other ones, and chapter 12 and verse 27. Does someone have that, or else I'll read it? Whoever is slothful will not roast his game, but the diligent man will get precious wealth. What does it mean he won't roast his game? How does he eat it then? He eats it raw. Why? He's too lazy to get some firewood, start a fire, and roast his game. Isn't that sad? But they must have observed people doing that to come up with this proverb. Chapter 26 and verse 13. The sluggard says, there's a lion in the road. There's a lion in the streets. As a door turns on its hinges, so does a sluggard on his bed. The slug buries his hand in the dish, as Dave read, and wears him out to bring it to his mouth. The sluggard is wise in his own eyes and seven men who can answer sensibly. So they're lazy. They're lazy. And because of that, they love to sleep. We already read that. A little sleep, a little slumber. Chapter 24. Does someone have that? Okay, go ahead.
Prepare thy work without and make it fit for thyself.
Verse 30 through 34. Chapter 24. Lacking sense, okay?
And lo, it was all grown over with thorns and nettles, and covered the face thereof, and the stone wall thereof was broken down.
His property was just a mess. Weeds everywhere. Broken wall. Go ahead.
Then I saw and considered it well. I looked upon it and received instruction. Yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth, and thy want as an armed man.
Now, what I want to point you out that is this man, when he saw his property, he observed it, and he gained what?
Instruction.
He learned a lesson. This is marvelous when you think about it. He goes, look at that guy. He has land. He has farm. And he has the potential to make something out of his life. Opportunities right there, but he can't get out of bed. I learned something. If I ever get property, if I ever get land, a farm, I'm going to get out of bed early. And I'm going to work. This guy's going to lose everything he's been given because he's a sluggard. He's lazy. And the opposite of that is being diligent. These things are given to us to learn a lesson. All right? Thank you. All right. So the next one would be, he not only does he love to sleep, because of that, you could say he lacks initiative. So does someone have 21? Mark, you got it? Okay, Dave, go ahead.
Okay,
verse 13 through 16.
Oh, 13 through 16?
No, I'm sorry. 25 and 26.
The desire of the lazy man kills him, for his hands refuse to labor. He covets greedily all day long, but the righteous gives and does not spare.
I think this is so typical of so many people that love leisure, love to be lazy, but they have no initiative. And because of that, they crave things, don't they? They want the good things of life, but when they don't have it, do they have the capacity to look at themselves and say, well, here's the reason? No. So what do? They blame everybody else. They blame the government. They blame their victims. Everything's set against them. And woe is me. And that's why they never can get ahead. But core to the problem, that is a universal truth, it's not always true universally. There's exceptions. But core to the problem is they're just lazy. They don't have initiative. I mean, people come to America with no education. They're illiterate. They can't speak the language. They work their tail off, and they become financially well off and independent. Foreigners come to America and do that all the time, don't they? That's why you do business at their place of business. They're owning it, and you're buying from them. And while Americans who go to school, can go to college, could run these companies, are poor and impoverished. And why? Too many are just lazy. No initiative. Now, we could spend a lot of time talking about that. I like this, though. They have big plans. Who's got that one? Chapter 13 and verse 4. All right, let's read it. Verse 13, or 4 of chapter 13. The soul the sluggard craves and gets nothing, while the soul the diligent is richly supplied. Chapter 26, that's not the one I wanted. Verse 16, he loves to give advice, and he's wise in his own eyes. Remember, wiser than seven men's. Then in chapter 14, verse 23, in all toil there's profit, but mere talk tends only to poverty. Now, how many of you have met someone or know someone, they have all the plans in the world of how to get rich? They know all the solutions of what to do to get wealthy. And they know what's wrong with everybody else, don't they? And they'll talk all the plans, and you're always waiting for them to carry through on those plans, but do they ever do it? I mean, it sounds good. They want you to get involved, and often they want you to finance it. And what should you do? Well, Proverbs already said, if you're sure, give certainty for your brother, run. You know, and if you do, you do everything, get out of it, because they're going to take you down with them. Because when the sluggard borrows money from you, will you ever get it back? Will his business plan ever succeed? No, because of all these things we're seeing right here. Now, I imagine, I know some of you could tell stories that you've personally done this and you've seen it happen. Eva's shaking her head, yes. And it's not because people are bad. People, it's just they haven't learned the lesson of being diligent and learned wisdom over foolishness. And I love this. They always have excuses. Chapter 22 and verse 13. Does someone have that?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. Okay. And how many times have we heard this one? It's maybe the ones you remember from the Proverbs. There's a lion outside. I'll get killed if I go outside. It's interesting. What does he mean when he says that? He's thinking while he's sleeping, there's a lion outside. Is there a literal lion? Is there? No, it's probably a little kitty cat meowing. But in his mind, will a kitty cat do for as an excuse to not go to work or get out of bed? Does it have to be a lion? No, it can be anything. Anything will suffice to excuse it. Oh, my back hurts. I'm just a little tired today. I got a little headache. I was up late last night. Oh, really? Why? And you've interviewed, you've talked to people. Why weren't you at work today? I had a flat tire, or my wife's car broke. It's amazing, all the excuses that come up. And they're at the tip of their tongue, and they're so good at giving excuses, and they're convincing when they give them. Like, okay, just don't let it happen again. Then it happens again and again and again. Everything's a lion. Everything is an emergency. Everything excuses them from doing work. Now, sadly, that might be some of us. So we just have to ask the question, am I a sluggard? Am I a sluggard? Now, no one is in this room, I know, because, well, we're just perfect people. And so Proverbs were written to other people. I just did some work. Here's a Colorado farmer, and it was in 07. He tried to replace a third of his seasonal workers who came across the border. to harvest his corn crops, and he tried to hire local residents who were wanting some extra summer cash. He was surprised to find few takers for this backbreaking work in picking the sweet corn. Are you surprised? I mean, berry farmers, how many berry fields are there? Very few. Why?
Can't get help picking.
And how many of us, when we were younger, picked berries? All right. How many kids that are under 30 ever picked berries? Oh, you? They made you? For money? No, I'm talking about for work. Nobody. Thank you. And I'm not saying it's wrong, but prosperity has made so many conveniences. Our children don't have to work, and they don't really have the opportunity because of child labor laws and other things. So what do they spend most of their time doing? Playing games. We saw in that lesson 2 weeks ago, 10 hours on social media a day. That's I don't know how that can you could do that much. That's 10 hours. But prosperity enables us to do this. And so you're raised up. And you know what? The number one complaint of employers today about Generation X workers, they have a poor work ethic or no work ethic. And it's not only their fault, it's sometimes it's the fault of the parents because we have allowed this to happen by not allowing them to enjoy the wisdom of hard labor, okay, and developing a work ethic, okay? It used to be it was a source of deep embarrassment if you didn't have a job. The younger people, when they hire them, they say, here's what they say, the more your employee views their job as something to do between the weekends. They live for the weekends. And I talked to a lot of young people, especially in the world, that's all they live for is the weekend. And a job is just something to get them from Sunday to Saturday. And it's really in the way. Here's an actual story. A contract worker was explaining to his boss why he had completed a project that had a deadline of yesterday. And today he didn't have it done. And here's what he said. Well, it wasn't as easy as I thought it would be. I ran into some glitches along the way. Plus, I got a lot going on. I've got a life too, you know. What? You mean your job is interfering with your life? And so he knew he had this deadline and just let it go because life's more important on the weekends. Now, I understand things could happen, but this is here. You hear this over and over. I would ask you to interview, just talk to people that have employees and ask them just to talk about employees today and their work ethic. You'll find the same story over and over. It's hard, it's terribly hard to find people that want to work. I'll tell you one story, because I used to employ people. But I'll tell you this one guy, as we were working, we were working for the state when John worked there too. We were painting the roof, the shingle roofs, Forest Service green. And it's hot, and it's not a fun job, but it's something you do. And I'm up there, and here's this guy who was fullback for our football team, went to Portland State to play football, so he knew how to work out and do all those things. Got up on the roof, he didn't want to work, never worked in his life. And so he's up there, and it's a steep roof, and you build a little A-frame to put your bucket on, your paint. And he's up there, and he's looking around, and he just kicks it, and the bucket of paint rolls down the roof onto the sidewalk and splatters on some cars. And the boss comes out, all right, clean it up, gives him new buckets, gets him back up there because that's an accident. He does it the second time. Do you think he ever was up on the roof again? No. He's out doing some easy job while I'm up there painting the roof. Why? A sluggard. He dropped out of football. He could have been a good fullback for the Portland State. But he quit after 2 days the first week because it was too hard. And it's because of work ethic. So it's not just a generational thing. I mean, today, it's always been that way. You're some people that just don't know how to work. Young people, if you want to get ahead, the best thing you do is get up early in the morning. Set your alarm clock without a snooze. Get up. So what one thing to do? Get up anyway. You set a precedent. You set something for life that you don't allow yourself to sleep in, because that is a pattern that will drive you into poverty. It will. Get up out of bed. You say, well, I'm tired. Go to bed early, okay? That's the solution, isn't it? And then when you work as hard as you can when you go to the job, because that is the picture of the diligent person that is in contrasted to the worker. So we don't have a lot of time. We're going to model Christ, but you got to be ant-like. And what is the ant? Does he have a boss looking over him all the time? Is someone telling him what to do? The best worker that I've ever had work for me would anticipate what needs to be done next and would do it without me telling him to do it. Is that true in the service?
Absolutely.
All the time. And some people, they require direction for everything, and that's fine if they work hard at what they're doing. But some people, they don't even work hard at it, and when they're done, well, I'm done now, and you come back later, they've been standing for 2 hours. Well, why didn't you do the next? Well, I don't know. I did what you told me to do. But the ant doesn't have to have a boss. Doesn't have to have someone directing them, telling them to get out of bed or do this or do that. They just do it because they know it needs to be done. And if you have that kind of work ethic, you will be employed all the time. People will come to your door to hire you. Now let's talk about mothers. The worthy woman. I don't have time to read the whole thing, but I'll just read a couple of verses. You have to love this in chapter 30, verse 15. She rises while it is still night. She gives food to her husband and portions to her maidens. She considers a field and buys it. From her earnings, she plants a vineyard. Her earnings. And then what does she does with it? She invests it by planting a vineyard, enlarging her farm. She looks well to the way of her household, verse 27. Does not eat the bread of idleness. Now I said, and asked the question earlier, are only men sluggards? No. There's male sluggards and there are female sluggards. It's gender neutral, okay? So what does a female sluggard look like? If she is so blessed to have a husband that is providing that she doesn't have to work and she can raise the children, what a blessing that is today. And God bless the women that have to work and raise children at the same time. What a task. But if you're allowed to stay home and not have to work, do you sleep in? Or when you get up, your husband leaves, do you go back to bed? What do you do while he's gone? So I don't have anything to do. Oh, really? So do you end up watching TV? Now, I have not watched TV in the middle of the day for, I don't even know what's on anymore, but I can only guess it's still soap operas, right? And or reality TV shows, or these shows like they have a host that interviews people. You mentioned Jerry Springer once. Some, didn't you? And I couldn't believe someone mentioned, maybe it wasn't you. It was maybe at the preacher's, like, what? You even know who Jerry Springer is? I know who he is. And it's just trash. And then they have shows that are in syndication, you know, hit series of the past, like, it used to be in our day, it was Dynasty or Dallas, but now it's Friends or Sex in the City. You spend time watching those. Are you thinking about things that are honorable and pure and lovely and of good repute? Are we? No, we're thinking about things that are of the world, that if it happened in my family, my wife went out on me and had an affair, I would be devastated. But yet now they entertain us and we chuckle at them because the world is so good at packaging these things in a humorous way. There's no denying it. They are humorous. And we can laugh at them. They say, but when you step back and realize what we're laughing at, I'm so sorry, God. Because if this happened in my family, we would be crying. So we have to take a look at ourselves. That's the purpose of Proverbs. Is to use them to examine ourselves. Which one am I, the sluggard or the diligent worker? So well, I don't know what to do while I'm home, while my husband's away. Well, then we need to talk to an older woman to be how to be a homemaker and how to buy that vineyard and how to buy a piece of property. You know, I'm talking about metaphorically, right? But both men and women can be sluggards. And God's calling us to be this wise person. The last thing, I won't even read it, but the sluggard always had plans. The wise man plans his work, but then he works his plan. And you can read the scriptures. And it's just, that's so important. They have a plan, but then they work it. That's the key. It's not just talk. They actually go out and do something about it. And with that, you know, we can become prosperous in this life, successful in this life, especially in America. We can be economically prosperous. Now, there will be exceptions, but universally, this is the truth. That if you work hard, God will promise you, you will never suffer want. Now, we'll trust that God will provide all things for us because we seek first Him and His kingdom, don't we? And that's His promise. We'll never suffer want. But yet, we're going to work as hard as we can in this life as though everything depends upon us. And if we follow these gems of wisdom that are found in Proverbs, we will have success. Do you believe that? And just remember the last thing from the book of Colossians. When Paul is writing to people that served masters in their days, he says, you work hard, with heartily, from the heart, not as men pleasers. But he says, remember who you serve. It's Jesus Christ whom you serve. And so when you get up tomorrow and go to work, you remember one thing and that's it. You're serving Jesus Christ today. I'm going to work as hard as I can for you, Lord. All right, if you're with us and you realize, boy, that's the kind of person I want to be. I want to be a person like Jesus Christ, like God my Father, while I walk on this earth. I want to walk with wisdom and diligence, but I've messed up so many times. That's why we just rejoice in God's grace, because at any moment, if you come forward and you acknowledge your wrongdoings and you confess those sins, He will forgive us. And if you're not a child of God and you want to be buried with Him in baptism to start a new life, to walk in newness of life, you can start all over. Where else can you do that? But in Christ, you can do that. If we can help you anyway, once you come, as we stand and sing, just one verse of this song, please.